Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, the beautiful story of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we've been studying the story about Balaram killing the Vidha gorilla, and I think today we'll finish it up. Remember, we did this, a puppet show of this in Miami. I don't know if Sukadurt remembers, but we did a puppet show, and we had I had a mustard jar full with red yogurt, and I remember when they struck the thing, I squirted all the whole audience, all the kids in the audience. This thing. Okay, text 24, I guess we'll read together. Sabahu tala sankasho. Can you repeat it? Sabahu tala sankasho. Mushti kritcha kapishvaraha. Mushti kritcha kapishvaraha. Asajya rohini putram. Asajya rohini putram. Tabhyam bhakshasya aru yajat. Tabhyam bhakshasya aru rujat. Please chant. Vaishnavi? One of our younger members here? No? Saha? He. Bahu? Both his arms. Tala? Palm trees. Sankasho? as big as mushti, into fists, kritcha, making kapi of apes, ishvaraha, the most powerful, asajja, confronting Rohini Putram, the son of Rohini Balaram, Tabhyam, with them, Vakashasi, upon his chest, Arurujat, he beat. Translation. Vivida, the most powerful of apes, now clenched his fists at the end of his palm tree-sized arms, came before Lord Balaram, and beat his fists against the Lord's body. Text 25, we can do it together. Yadavendra pitam dorbyam tvaktva mushalasamvai jatravabhyardayat krudha sopatagridhyambamam. Translation. The furious lord of the Yadavas then threw aside his club and plow and with his bare hands hammered a blow upon Dvivida's collarbone. The ape collapsed, vomiting blood. Purport. In Krishna, Srila Prabhupada writes, this time Lord Balaram became most angry. Since the gorilla was striking him with his hands, he would not strike him back with his own weapons, the club or the plow. Simply with his fists, he began to strike the collarbone of the gorilla. This striking proved to be fatal to Dvivida. 626. Chakam pe tena pat, you're not ready? Chakam pe tena patata, satan kaksa vanaskati, parvata kurushadula, vayuna noivambashi. Translation. When he fell, O Targa among the Kurus, Rivataka mountain shook, along with its cliffs and trees, like a wind tossed boat at sea. Report. The word Tanka here indicates not only the mountain cliffs, but also the fissures and other spots where water had accumulated. All these mountainous areas shook and trembled when Dvivida fell. Text 28. Jaya shabdo namak shabda sadhu sadvita chambare surasiddha manindranam asit kushuma varshinas. Translation. In the heavens, the demigods, perfect mystics, and great sages cried out, victory to you, obeisances to you, excellent, well done, and showered flowers upon the Lord. Text 28. Evam nihatya dvidvidham jagavyati karavaham samstu yamano bhagavan janai swapuram avishat. Translation. Having thus killed Dvivida, who had disturbed the whole world, the Supreme Lord returned to his capital as the people along the way chanted his glories. Thus ends the purports of the humble servants of his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 66th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Balaram Slays Dvivida Gorilla. So this has been a pretty organic fight, a pretty green fight here, picking up trees and rocks and all kinds of different elements from the earth. The weapons these days aren't quite so simple. But we are, just like Dvivida here in his demoniac nature, he's actually pretty much deforested the whole place. In the same way in our modern society, our demoniac nature has also deforested much of Mother Earth by, you know, slaughter places for animals, and also this fracking in so many different ways. So we should be very conscious that we should be like Lord Balaram, the Paramacharya, to actually restore Mother Earth and to make her a pleasant place again by planting wonderful trees and gardens and offering them the results to Krishna. But Dvivida Gorilla here is a lot more demoniac than just that. He's actually now physically, you know, taking his fists and whamming them on the Lord's chest. Lord Balaram is also called Adiguru. And so therefore this is part of that big mad elephant offense that we hear about, being offensive to the guru and to the devotees, and especially the spiritual master, the guru. We heard earlier that Dvivida was actually a very nice devotee at one time, and he was a devotee of Lord Ram, I believe. But he had some bad association and became very offensive to his lord and master. So I'd like to talk a little bit about this mad elephant offense, being especially to the guru, to the spiritual master. No one really wants to be told what to do. Recently, I had an experience that especially men don't like to be told what to do by women. But even so, all of us, we don't like to be told what to do, even by the Supreme Lord himself or the guru. So therefore, most of the population is just in their own little world thinking that they're the controller and they can tell everyone else what to do. But in human form of life, it's a little different. We do see that sometimes people become a little bit more receptive, actually very receptive. When there's a crisis or a catastrophe, the plane starts dipping down and is going to crash or something like that, immediately we're all ears. We're listening to the authority. Please help. You know, you're going to definitely listen how to get out of here, how to save yourself. So you're all ears. So the human form of life, if one is a little bit intelligent, you'll see that there is a catastrophe, there's a problem here. It's a big problem. But I've been here so many lifetimes, and everything is crashing down on top of me. Nothing's going quite the way I would like it to. And ultimately, we come back again and again. But if we have a little bit of sense that we'll see that, yes, I need an authority to tell me how to get out of here, the way out, and then we will begin to submit ourselves to listen to the qualified spiritual master. It does go against our grain, though, to be told what to do and to actually have to surrender and maybe actually do things that we don't want to do. There's so many do's and don'ts, even in Krishna consciousness. We sometimes get a little overwhelmed. I know we had some students here last weekend, and they really didn't know anything about anything. Very, very little. And so we had to be very, very careful that we don't, you know, flood them with the do's and the don'ts. You know, you may have seen they weren't dressed quite up to standard. Even in the kitchen, they definitely were not up to standard. And so we had to be very sensitive that too many do's and don'ts, still just like, you know, they're out of there. You know, they don't want to hear it. So Prabhupada was very careful to realize that it does smart a little bit. It does pinch us a little bit to hear too much at one time. But ultimately, we do accept because of Shreyas. We understand that it's going to help us in the future. If we want to get out of here, we can, if we do what Srila Prabhupada says and what all the different acharyas have said in the past. And we see that, yes, it is working. Gradually, we are becoming a little bit enlightened and realizing that this is for our best interest. In the beginning, we didn't really realize what it meant to take a spiritual master. We can hear stories of the very first devotees that became initiated. They were just like, oh, come on, there's a initiation going on, sit down, you know, or here, yeah, you've only been here a few days, but that's all right, the Swami's here, you know, come initiate. And we didn't realize the weight, or guru means heavy, we didn't realize the weight of actually taking a spiritual master. I think over the years now we've realized it, and hopefully not everyone has been scared off, although we see many of the second generation don't want to accept this burden on their shoulders, this indebtedness to the spiritual master, which is unfortunate. It's very, very unfortunate, because we do need the spiritual master. We need to be disciplined. And at some point in our lives, we have to agree, yes, I'm going to be disciplined, that I need it. I'm weak. I'm like a little baby infant in spiritual life. I don't know what to do, what not to do. I need some strength, like we just were chanting, that the spiritual master is all my strength to follow these rules and regulations. So we are very vulnerable also in this material world Papa describes us, we're walking on the razor's edge. It's so tottering, we can fall down at any point and completely forget again and fall back into the, like the other 90% of the population, and forget that we do need to get out of here this lifetime, finish up our business and get out. But this relationship of having a spiritual master is a sensitive issue, and we've seen that even great personalities as far as Lord Indra and Durvasa Muni, so many examples of the great souls having this problem of aparad or actually offending the spiritual master, forgetting the real position of that. Davidagrila, he had some bad association. This was one cause. But there are many different causes. This bad association is a major one. I find it so beneficial to hang out with my God sisters and God brothers because they're so fired up, you know, to serve Srila Prabhupada in a more serious manner as we get older and older. So therefore, it's very important to associate with those who are understand the seriousness of taking the spiritual master. If we hang out with people that aren't initiated, that really don't care about it, don't think that it's such an important thing, or might maybe criticize other spiritual masters in the movement, it's very detrimental, and it could cause some aparad in the future. So this is very important. Also to learn the proper respect to the spiritual master. It's said that we should bow down at least three times a day. When we wake up in the morning, we roll over immediately, pay our obeisances to the spiritual master. When he enters the room or visits here, there should be proper respect. You never sit on the same level. Sometimes we just get real friendly, especially with the current spiritual masters, because they don't seem so old and scary as maybe Prabhupada was. And so we become very much on a friendly mood, friendly platform, and we forget that we might be sitting on the same level or that we're not treating him in the proper, respectful way. Sometimes also we forget that we should always honor the instructions of the spiritual master by following them, even when he's not present. Not that he's gone away and the instruction goes with him, but it remains. And therefore, it's very important to keep this proper mood. So yes, we do need a spiritual master. Krishna even displayed that. He took a spiritual master, Sandipani Muni. Not only did he learn the 64 arts, one each day, but he also learned submissiveness. We know that story of going to collect the firewood. And also the Vaishnav Sadachar, how to act as a very nice devotee. So Krishna also, he demands in the Bhagavad Gita, he's instructing us personally that you must take a spiritual master. There's no ifs, ands, buts, there's no little exceptions, that everyone who's serious must take a spiritual master, inquire submissively, render service, and understand that this is the way that you're going to get the mercy of himself. At one time, I helped with the Gurukula, and I was actually kind of sitting in the Gurukula in a different position as like a teacher. And it was a little bit eye-opening at that point to see the people on the other side of them supposedly learning and trying to be respectful. And their attitude really made a difference on how much you wanted to give what you had to give them, to teach them. And it was always enlivening and actually maybe so excited when someone was really anxious to learn, attentive and very submissive and really had that enthusiasm to hear. So we should remember that as disciples, that it really makes a difference on what percentage the guru is going to give to you. He can give so much. I remember one spiritual master in the movement had said one time that if he just had one disciple that would come to him and ask him questions, be mentally ready to accept his advice, he would be happy. So you can imagine, I remember one student, actually several students, came up to me one time and said, you know, what you're teaching us, going to Mungo Artik and all this stuff, I'm never going to follow that. I'm never going to do that. And it like dampens your enthusiasm to give this, you know, why am I wasting my time? So it's very important that we are all ears to the spiritual master and ready to offer all respects by accepting whatever the instructions might be. Because we need this guidance. We should want this guidance. If we don't want it, then we'll be guided by what? Our mind. And see how far that gets you. I guarantee you'll go a lot farther by taking the guidance of the spiritual master. In the Nectar Instruction, Rupa Goswami, he deals a lot with elephant offense, this aparad, especially in regards to seeing the spiritual master as an ordinary, mundane person, kind of looking at his qualifications and judging him in that way. This also can be very detrimental. We should actually see all the devotees internally, see their internal features, not just their external features, because we could be very surprised that we are dealing with such great personalities, not just that they have some defect or some disqualification because of some material lacking. So this is very important training that we have, that we train our vision and our mentality to see internally the features of every devotee. This is great purification, which we need, and it should be a continuing, ongoing thing. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had an experience with his spiritual master that Lord Kishore Das Babaji could see and commented that, yes, you're so qualified, you're a scholar, you know astrology, you're excellent at this, Sanskrit, everything like that, but this is just insignificant, he said. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur appreciated that, that he was seeing that these material qualifications are not what we should be looking at. Because material things, they're usually very, they're dissatisfying, ultimately. And therefore, the worst scenario is that we reject our spiritual master because we see there's some lacking materially. And worst case is that we go and take another spiritual master. This is very offensive to the Lord. And we saw what happened in the case of, there was one devotee when the moon thing was going on. We heard that where the disciple was thinking that the material scientist knew better, more qualified in this matter than Srila Prabhupada, and very soon he was gone. I can barely remember it, but I heard it cutting up vegetables in the kitchen one Sunday. I think it was Hari Vilaspa who was saying how he was getting the arrangements to take Prabhupada on a ferry across to France from England, and he knew the schedule. Hari Vilaspa knew the schedule, exactly when it left, everything. Does anyone remember the story? And he knew that everyone was going to leave on time, so he was really pushing to get it going, you know, get Prabhupada there on time. Prabhupada was saying, it's not going to be at that hour. It's not. But Prabhupada, I know the schedule. And when they got there, sure enough, the thing was totally exactly what Prabhupada said. It was not there. The schedule had been changed or something like that. Do you know the details? I can't remember. Yeah, but, I mean, Hari Vilaspa was just like, oh my gosh. And I was thinking Prabhupada, you know, didn't have this material qualification that I knew better, someone else knew better, but he learned a great lesson from that. So what are the qualifications of the spiritual master that we should look for? And that is that the spiritual master, his life and soul is Harikatha, simply telling everyone about Krishna and having the capacity to deliver everyone to Krishna. And this Harikatha for Krishna is not any other reason but for the pleasure of Krishna. It's not to fame glory, to let everyone know how much I know, or to make money like they do in India with Bhagavad Katha or something like this. But it's actually giving pleasure to my Lord to speak about him. And therefore, the spiritual master is receiving that highest pleasure and wants to give it to everybody else. And also, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, that actually I am, don't consider myself a spiritual master. I consider myself a disciple of my disciples. So therefore, he knows his proper position. He's not confused anymore that who the supreme enjoyer is in all regards. So there are precautions that we can take, and we should, of course, not accept a spiritual master for our own sense gratification either. Prabhupada warned us that in the very beginning. Don't think the spiritual master is your pet, or think that I should get this spiritual master just because my friends have him as a spiritual master, or that he has a really rockin' CD out these days, you know, or something like that. No, we should really understand the meaning of the spiritual master. I know of some spiritual masters actually will say that I'm not your guru. I'm just not your guru, and he will let them choose somebody else. So we have to be very honest and realize that we are eternally the disciple of our spiritual master, eternally. Nothing will change it. Nothing should ever change it. And if it does change, it's a great offense. Therefore, we should have unflinching faith in our spiritual master. It's described that if we do, then all the imports of the transcendental literature will be revealed to us. What more could we want than that? To have everything revealed to us in our hearts. Nowhere else will we get it. And so we should be very, very attentive to our spiritual master and realize our position. Every day we're reminded that of Guru Puja. So how important it is to come to Guru Puja every day. It is so important that we hear the glories of the spiritual master. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada started that very early in the movement. And there's actually quite a connection between our chanting of Hare Krishna and our spiritual master and our obeying the spiritual master. The third offense is that if we disobey the orders of the spiritual master, that holy name in our hearts, which is so important for us, it will not have the same effect. We might not follow instructions of our spiritual master and keep chanting, which we should. We should never stop chanting. But that offense will waylay the realizations that we have of the holy name and our attachment to the holy name. So we should very much understand that also that we should serve not only Krishna. Sometimes we get really hung up, especially if we're involved in deity worship. Oh, I serve Krishna all day long. And then when we have an opportunity to serve the devotees or the spiritual master, we fail to do that. No, I have to do this service for Krishna. And we that lack also affects our chanting because we're thinking that I'm too advanced or this is more important. We forget the importance of the spiritual master and the devotees. Therefore, that respect for the holy name will not happen. We will not be in that humble state. So there's a great connection in our chanting. We were singing some Bhaktivinoda Thakur songs last night, and this one line touched me. It's under the song Kabhi Habhi Bole Se Dhyanamar about our aspirations for chanting properly. And one of them said that I shall become, this is a prayer which we should remember, I shall become stunned by touching the lotus feet of the great souls who are able to relish those mellows. I will be constantly immersed in the sweet nectar of the holy name. So by taking that spiritual master, we get the mercy to actually taste the nectar of the holy name. And as we sing in the Gurvastukam prayers every morning, which we should definitely sing every single day without fail, it describes that that this mercy in the form of the spiritual name of the Lord and also of the mercy of the spiritual master will put out that fire of birth and death, our still hankering, that heartful desire to still have material things. We have to get rid of that. We just have to. And the only way is by the grace of the spiritual master. And of course, the spiritual master's number one instruction is to chant the holy name. for our ultimate purification. So sometimes we think that, oh, the old good old days, I was more fired up to be more surrendered, and there were authorities there, you know, Prabhupada was there, and we were, you know, we would never deviate, we would never not do what Prabhupada said. But Prabhupada still is here in the form of the holy name. And there are still authorities here. The books are here. The authorities are here. The temple president is here. Our God sisters and God brothers are still here. And it's good, because we should realize that these instructions should force us, just like sometimes the temple president would force us to do different things. And it was healthy for us spiritually. And we very soon to glorify Brahmananda. And I think it was Brahmananda Prabhu that came to Prabhupada at one time and said, I don't feel like bowing down. So what do I do? And Prabhupada said, bow down anyway. And then you'll get the inspiration to bow down. So in this way, we still have Srila Prabhupada in his instructions. And we should realize that we should be forced to bow down to the spiritual master at all times, at every moment. And to realize that that is the only way we're going to get his mercy. So we have to take shelter of our spiritual master. It's so important. The shelter means a protection from the onslaught of the material universe. It's going on everywhere. There's a war going on out there. And I don't know about you, but I feel protected by following the instructions of Srila Prabhupada. Because there's different weapons flying around. There's the advertising. There's all this internet, all this wireless stuff going on at your fingertips that can immediately sweep you away. Bad association is there. It's the poison gas. It's all over the planet right now. Bad association, different forms and shapes. It's very dangerous to be out there. There's also weapons within ourselves. There's bombs within ourselves. Old bad habits. If we go out there, very easy to ignite. Just like that, they can flare up. And there's many examples of very senior devotees that with just a little hearing of something or a little taste of something, gone for years and years, even though they were so dear to Srila Prabhupada. So we have to take this shelter very seriously. There's also starvation and thirst out there, which purge our life force, hankering and lamenting. It starves us. All we want. Instead of wanting Krishna, we want material things, but we're parched all the time. We never are satisfied. We're always looking for more and more disgusting pleasure in the material world. So it's so important to take shelter of Srila Prabhupada and appreciate Prabhupada every single day. And we do that by following his instructions, by glorifying him. And I would like to say that yesterday, Lakshmana received an invitation to the 50th anniversary that is going to be initiated, the celebration for Prabhupada, in Houston in September. And I was thinking, boy, they're planning, you know, they're going to take a big, you know, they're inviting big people from all over the world, all devotees to come and tell what they're going to do for Srila Prabhupada in this celebration. And I'm thinking, have we even thought about it? Has our temple even gotten something together? What are we going to do to show our appreciation for Srila Prabhupada, for our spiritual master, the spiritual master of the entire universe? What are we going to do to show the world how important Srila Prabhupada is? But even if we don't do something big, at least independently, each one of us should think how I can become more serious disciple, how I can become that moon that Prabhupada wanted. So maybe we can get together and figure out some things we can do for Srila Prabhupada and go internally within ourselves and see how we can develop a more appreciative attitude and submissive attitude to Srila Prabhupada. So maybe some people have some things they'd like to say. Any ideas of things we could do for Srila Prabhupada? Sukada Prabhu.
I was in New York this weekend for Rath Yatra, and also they celebrate, you know, the memorial for Brahmananda. They had a big one in Brooklyn. They had also had one at 26 Second Avenue with some devotees, you know, I hadn't seen in a long time or maybe never saw, like Nayan Abhiram and Narendati was there. A lot of a devotee named Ugrasena, who I'd never met. And as the memories went on in 26 Second Avenue, it became so apparent that Brahmananda's fame all came from his unalloyed devotion to Srila Prabhupada. You know, he just loved Prabhupada so much that he would do whatever he asked. You know, go to Pakistan, okay, he'll go to Africa, okay, he'll go. It was so dangerous in some of these situations, like Pakistan, they were almost killed. And Prabhupada read an article where it said that some Hare Krishnas were, or some monk, maybe it said monks, some monks were killed in Pakistan, and Prabhupada was so upset because he thought it was Brahmananda and the devotees. So when Brahmananda, then a telegram was sent to Brahmananda, and he went immediately went back to India, and when he walked in the room and Srila Prabhupada saw him, Srila Prabhupada just, you know, practically ran up and embraced him and was like crying. So it was just incredible to hear about his devotion. It was so inspiring and so glorious. When they were moving the deity of Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan, there were so many men who were carrying it. It was extremely heavy, you know, because the material it was made of, and it started to flounder, it started to drop. So Brahmananda immediately went underneath to support it, you know, at the risk of, you know, breaking his back or whatever, but that was just his mood. So I just thought I'd share that since you're talking about devotion to Prabhupada. Brahmananda kind of epitomized that devotion.
Spiritual master is not ordinary, and the disciples that are fully devoted him are not ordinary souls. Yeah, when you think of Brahmananda, you think of Prabhupada. And even the passing from this world is not ordinary. We know. I mean, immediately everyone says, oh, yeah, Brahmananda's with Prabhupada. You know, there's no question that his consciousness was there. He was there with Prabhupada. He was there with Prabhupada all the time. So it's not ordinary. We should realize the fortune that we have with this movement. Yes.
This is a little off subject, but I was going to comment on what you said earlier about how careful you have to be when you're first going to introduce when people come, or even if you meet them. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to be really careful, like that. You know, your goal, you have to be mindful of your goal. You're just trying to get them interested. Mm-hmm. You're just trying to get them to have some idea of what's going on. You know, they're so I'm still overwhelmed and bewildered, so, you know, you kind of forget if you live in a temple, like, how overwhelmed and bewildered they really are. So you're walking up to them with this whole new thing, and if you just overwhelm them with the do's and the don'ts, instead of the nectar, like, you want to try to get them into the nectar of, like, how blissful Krishna consciousness really is, you know, and so, like, by hook or by crook, like, in the right way, you really want to try to get people interested in that. You don't want to push them away farther with all these do's and don'ts. Like, I'm thinking, one time I was watching someone give a palace tour in New Vrindavan, and this person was just telling them all about sex life and this and that, and I could just see the horrid looks on all these students that are like 19 and 20. Like, you know, like, they were just like aghast. And I was like, oh, I was just cringing in the back of the palace, like, oh, don't say that yet. Don't tell him that yet. Just show him, like, give him some really nice prasadam. And you have to really care about the people. You know, it can't just be another person that, you know, you have a tendency to go through the whole day and you just think, oh, it's just another person and they don't count. I mean, I'll just give an example. Can I give a 1 minute example? Do you have time? One time I was in Portland, Maine, and I was giving out these books, and this guy just wouldn't take a book. He wouldn't take a book. He thought it was so funny that I was giving him so much attention, and he wouldn't take a book. So finally, I just said, okay, and I was going to, like, let him go. And as he walked away, I said, by the way, you didn't tell me what you do. What's your job? What do you do for a living? And he said, oh, I'm a butcher. And like, you know how like when your eyes blink sometimes, or you have like a, my eyes blinked really fast, and I saw his face in front of like series of animals, like life. And I just stopped for a second and said, okay, that's it. I'm not taking no for an answer from you. You give back here. You're taking this book here. Just take this little vegetarian cookbook. Add these recipes to your diet. You might feel really better, you know, and then maybe you'll get around to reading some of this philosophy. Maybe you won't. But I think if you add some of these recipes, you might be really glad and you won't be so attached to meat eating. I mean, I was just trying to color code it any way I could, you know.
So. Did he take it?
He took the book. Okay. I could afford to give him the book. That wasn't the point, you know. Like, I wanted him to have enough interest in it. So I just think, like, sometimes we forget. When you've been a devotee for a long time, you forget. Like, we think we're suffering, you know, from disease, old age, problems, money. But you just kind of forget, like, what these people are going through. With no knowledge. I don't know how they do it. I don't really know how people live through life and not have Krishna. So that was just a story I wanted to tell.
Well, Prabhupada said we should, especially on Sankirtan, everyone should leave with a very positive experience. In the same way we're preaching here in the temple and lecturing. We had to do a wonderful program, Lakshmimoni Madhavati and I, at the Unitarian Church. Two Sundays ago, we did the whole program. I gave a sermon, and Manamati did a story. Dhruva Maharaj told a story, and Lakshmimoni introduced the holy name and said a prayer. And we had to be very careful and pick it so that it was, you know, conducive to them. But it was very effective. Everyone really liked it, and so we have to become expert at all that. It's a lot of fun. Okay. One other thing, where?
I've mentioned it to Jivanov before. What you say is true about not overwhelming people when they come to the temple. But just one thing I was thinking about when my daughter was three, I think it was 1976, and I'd never been to the temple before. So we went to the Sunday feast in Los Angeles, and it was dark, and it was kind of drizzling out. It was kind of cold. And Bhakta Priya got a hold of me. And she brought me into the temple room, and I remember I couldn't even see the altar because it was too bright. I couldn't see it. I was blinking. It was like looking straight into the sun. So I asked her, I said, I want to leave, right after I'd been in the temple, just a few minutes. So she took me out, and she walked me down to Mula Prakriti's ashram. And there was nothing in the ashram except an ironing board and a pair of underpants on the floor. That's all that was in the front room. And Labunga Latik was sleeping in the back room, and I don't know if anybody knows Labungala, but you know, it's like waking up Muchakunda. So we woke her up, and she came out of the room, and her eyes were blazing fire. So Bhakta Priya leaves me and my daughter sitting on the floor, and she says, I'm going to go get you prasadam, so stay here. So Labungala's in the bathroom, and I'm sitting on the floor, and I'm absolutely terrified. And my daughter looked sick. She said she's sick to her stomach. It's raining outside. So I got up, and I took her by the hand, and we ran down Watsika Avenue, and I swore I would never, ever go back to the temple again. I was running from the devotees. I was afraid someone was going to catch me, like kidnap me on the way down Watsika Avenue. It's a true story. So we got on the bus. I swore I'd never go back to the temple. For 1 week, I could not get Krishna out of my mind. I was so obsessed, and so we were walking down Pacific Avenue in Venice, and I'd never heard the Harinam party down there before, but they were on the boardwalk, and there's streets, boardwalk runs parallel to Pacific Avenue, and then there's perpendicular roads, and every time we crossed one of these roads, the Harinam party was there. So I heard them all the way down Pacific Avenue. I said, oh, maybe I better go back to the temple. So that was the story. But we never know how Krishna's acting within someone's heart. That was the point of it.